everyone, welcome back to another episode of But Why Though, the podcast. The podcast where every week we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Jose and Grant for being our newest patrons. Thank you so much for all of your support. And if you're listening right now and want to support us, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It is the easiest way to show your support and it helps people find us. But if you want to give a little more, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/butwhythepc. There you get access to exclusive content just for you. And as always, enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of But Why Though, the podcast. And today we are talking about Keanu Reeves being like the most Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
That was bad.
I know, I didn't know what to say.
I know Kung Fu. You couldn't even go with the main line. I knew Kung Fu.
Whoa.
Well, I'm going to leave this in. Matt, say hi.
Hi, hello. I know Kung Fu.
And we have a super special guest today, Carolyn from So Here's What Happens.
What's up? I don't know what I was just going to say. I was just going to say what happened. There we go. That's wrong. I know Kung Fu Hustle.
Now that we've effectively started with some derailment, we are here to talk about The Matrix in all of its glory, and Matt is going to be leading us through the episode.
Yes, so obviously I sound sick because I am sick. We went to South By. South By, baby. That's all I know. So go hear it. There you go. I also learned if you stop drinking, you get sick. So just keep drinking through everything you do. All right, so I'll start this
obviously off. Obviously I sound sick because I am sick. Is that how that works?
Yes.
You sound sick when you are sick?
Yes. All right, so I'll start this off with kind of an interesting question of, have you actually seen all three of the movies, and can you actually remember anything from the second or third movie? Because I'm assuming all of you have seen the first one.
Yes, to both.
Yeah. Carolyn, you go first.
Yes, I've seen all three movies. The first one, multiple times. The second and third, probably two times each, maybe. I do remember what happened in the second and third films, but, like, bits and pieces, like, specific scenes. Yeah, like, I always remember the scene, the highway chase sequence in part two. I always remember that, the one with the, you know, the albino twins. I always remember that scene. I always remember the scene with, the one where she has on, like, the spandex, not the spandex, the latex outfit. Oh my gosh, I'm looking at the Lord Jesus. Like, yeah, I remember parts. Yes. Yes. And I remember the attack in Zion where all of the sentinels come through. Yeah.
I think your answer is probably great of why I asked.
I remember specific scenes. Yes. Ask me the plots. I remember specific scenes, but not the whole plot.
I'm going to chime in and say that I have seen all three. I've seen the first one way too many times. I don't even have a count on that. And I've seen the second and third one multiple times, I think. But I also couldn't differentiate what was the second, what was the third. Because when we were talking about doing this episode, I was like, oh yeah, the twins. The twins were in the third one. They were cool. But no, they were in the second one. And I do remember the highway scene. I remember the highway scene, and I remember the fight in the rain from the third
Yes,
one?
That's the one where he's fighting all the Smiths. Yes.
Yes, yeah. So I remember those. I remember those two scenes. I know jack crap about the plots of the last two, other than that Zion gets attacked, but I think that's cheating because it just came to my memory because Carolyn mentioned it.
Adrian, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I've seen all the movies. I probably watched the third one a lot. like I've watched the first one more, but kind of making sure like I was differentiating the correct movies correctly. I mean, I remember basically all of the second movie because I really like the second one. I like the twins. I like when he's fighting in like the castle thing. Then he goes all Superman and saves her at the end. Like I like that one. The whole thing with the Frenchman. I like all that stuff. The Keymaker stuff. I like all that stuff. The third one, I mean, I kind of just, if I went back to watch it again, like if you told me, hey, go watch Matrix Revolution, I would probably just skip to the end and watch the rain fight scene. Because all the other stuff with like Bane and like him going to like the
Oracle
thing and getting jacked in there. I don't care too much about all that.
I remember the Keymaker too.
But I really like, I really like the second one. Like, it's not as good as the first, but it's also not the third. So, I probably remember that one more than I thought I did before we, because we talked about this last night, and I couldn't remember, like, which one was which, but now that I differentiated them in my head, the second one is definitely, lots of good scenes in that one.
I'm about the same. Obviously, I've seen the first one multiple times. I've only seen the second and third one once a piece, and I remember sneaking into the movies after watching, I think it was, I don't remember what movie it was, like Bad Boy 2, and then going to it. But, yeah, I couldn't remember much. I know a few fight scenes, don't remember stuff. But
that might have been the most early 2000s thing anyone has said in our podcast.
What? I do agree.
I stuck out of Bad Boys to go see one of the Matrix movies. I love it.
But, there might be a reason why we can't differentiate between these movies. But before we get to there, let's just go with a quick synopsis of the movie. Obviously, this is a science fiction film franchise. There's about three movies. It's basically a franchise that follows a group of heroes who fight a war against machine overlords that enslaved humanity in a VR or Matrix system.
So I would never describe the Matrix like that, but I guess that's right.
That's what it is.
Whose synopsis did you read?
I know.
That was literally, huh?
I mean, that's one through three.
Yeah, that's
what they're trying to do. It's not about a group of heroes. It's about the one.
Exactly.
It's about Keanu Reeves.
Okay, my bad. About a minus a group. It follows a hero who fights against a war against machine overlord.
He wouldn't have got to the thing without Trinity in the third movie. I think it needs a group.
And Morpheus played quite a lot. Zion would have got
destroyed with all the other people. I'm with you, man.
It's true. It's a group effort.
I mean, this is still How You Train Your Dragon group, but I mean, it's a group.
You just need to say Keanu Reeves like 10 times in the synopsis.
You couldn't even remember that he does kung fu.
Whatever, I do know, fun fact time, I do know that Keanu Reeves actually got black belts because of this movie, and it's the reason he's still in really good shape today. Because he kept on all the martial arts training after this movie.
Which we will get to. So let's get a little quick background on films. The Matrix films take place from 1999 to 2003. That's it.
Mm-hmm. That's such a short lifespan.
They're all based on a philosophical question from a 17th century French philosopher and mathematician, René Descartes. Basically, what is real or reality? Obviously, we have Athenian philosopher Plato, which also plays a role in the core of these movies, which we'll go into later. But that's basically what these are based on.
And Kate's going to talk a whole bunch of it because this is religious studies stuff.
Yes. There are three main films created by the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
Can you spell that?
Mm-hmm. Wachowskis.
And we'll go through the main cast, but there's only four people, so I guess a trio if it makes you feel better. You have Thomas Anderson, Neo the One, Keanu Reeves, Morpheus by Lawrence Fishburne. Hold on.
Thomas Anderson, Neo, the One, Keanu Reeves.
That's how it works.
When you say it like that, just listen to that. It sounds like one of those fighters who's rebranded himself like four different times.
I mean, that sounds about what happens, I feel. You have Morpheus, played by Lawrence Fishburne, Trinity, played by Carrie Ann Moss, and then Agent Smith, played by Hugo Weaving. And so, to get down to these movies, let's go with some of the ratings. Matrix, from 1999, had an 88 on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.7 on IMDb, 73 on Metacritic. And this movie actually won, 4 for 4 in Oscars. And it won 37 other awards. So it won 4 Oscars for Best Sound, Best Effects Sound, Best Effects Visuals, and Best Film Editing.
That's cool, because, like, it essentially, like, swept the genre categories. Like, those are the categories that, like, the Oscars always throw genre films into.
Yeah. And this is going up against Star Wars this year.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Man, okay. Dang. And that's actually a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
Also, an 88 seems really low. An 88 seems really low.
Yeah, it was. These are pretty low, surprisingly. Considering IMDb has this as 18th highest rated movie.
Yeah, I think...
I don't know.
No, the reason it was rated so low at that time, if you read a lot of critics' reviews, a lot of them, they liked the whole action concept, but they thought that the whole philosophical concept juxtaposed with action was, like, it didn't work. Because, like, some, like, I think it was, like, Robert Ebert thought that they paid too much attention to the action in, like, the third act of the film. So that's why a lot of people either really like the action and thing, but they thought the concept didn't mesh. But we all know it became a cult classic, like, following afterwards, and fans enjoyed it.
If those critics don't like Neo wrapping a rope around his hand and stopping a goddamn helicopter, or Lawrence Fishburne jumping out of a building, they can shove it. Go back to the goddamn
movie. Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, so it's nominated for 49 other awards. And here's where we get to the fun part, where why we might get confused. So we have The Matrix Reloaded, which came out in 2003, has a 73 on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.3 on IMDb, 62 on Metacritic. It actually won 8 awards and was nominated for 32 other ones, surprisingly. And then you have the fun part of The Matrix Revolution, the third one, which came out apparently 6 months later, also in 2003.
Yeah. Why?
And that one has a 36 on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.7 IMDb, 47 Metacritic. But apparently it won 4 awards and was nominated for 32 others.
So, like, were the Oscars, like, for best film editing, The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolution?
I don't think either one of these got nominated for an Oscar from
what
I looked at.
That's fair. I'm just... Wait. Oh, wait. So, were they in, like, the same award season? So, like,
they have to be that I know of. One came out in, like, May, and I believe the other one in November. That's
I want to see, like, these tickets, because if one won 8 and one 114, like, technically The Matrix just, like, dominated that award thing. I don't know.
But that is definitely the rarity of why we probably get confused, because they are back-to-back. As far as I know, that's, like, that is definitely the quickest turnaround I can think of for a movie.
Yeah, because, what happened is, I think they filmed it. It was one movie that they broke up into two. So that's what happened. It was actually supposed to be one film, and they broke it up into two films, because they thought it would have been too long. You know, so, which is kind of funny, because, like, no, we have films running at 3 hours long, and we're willing to stay in cinemas. But at that time, like, this is 1999, 2000 to 2003, For like the cinema going experience, like an hour and 45 minutes seemed like forever in an action in the cinema, right? Because I think the longest film predating that, I stand corrected if I'm wrong, would have been Titanic. So like at that time they were like split it up into two films. Now we can stay in the cinema for like 3 hours plus and remain unfazed.
Well, I think it's also weird though you mentioned that, because I believe that's the same time frame when Lord of the Rings first comes out.
Let me look at the release date, because The Matrix,
yeah, I'm gonna look up Lord of the Rings right now. But I also think it's different, because Lord of the Rings are like adapted from books, and it's not just action.
No, that is completely fair. I just know, like, for a long time of sitting in the theater, like, we do have the Lord of the Rings that I believe come out during this time.
I think the difference though might be is, I think, you know, whether it's justified or not, I do think a lot of people just see The Matrix as an action movie. Sure. And so I think it's a lot harder to justify watching an action movie that is 3 hours long than it is to watch, like, a high fantasy.
But this was
movie
back then, right? Long. Yeah.
Like, those are, like, when it comes to
building. Yeah, because back then, like, we would have called those films, like, epics, because Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which came out after, which had the same fight choreographer, like, that's considered an epic. Like, back then, we used to consider, like, films, like, that were, like, hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours and longer to be epics, right? And, like, that's was our frame of mind back then. Like, for now, so, like, Lord of the Rings would have been was considered a fantasy epic back in that time, too, right? So, like, once you added the word epic, you knew it was going to be long, so you prepared yourself for it.
Nice. And then, basically, they're done. That's it.
The Animatrix in there. The Animatrix counts.
Well, if you'd let me get there, they're technically in other media for direct to video, because they don't actually get released in a movie theater.
Whatever, man.
Thank you for mentioning Animatrix, because I was trying to remember, because I was like, I knew that I watched an animated film about that, and I remember we watched it by my friend, and like that thing blew my mind away. Like, it tripped me out completely. It was like, you know, this is like the period. The thing about the Matrix is it made people start to question reality. And I think the animated film actually made me question reality more than the film itself.
Yeah. So obviously, like Carolyn was talking about, we do have in 2001 we have actually the Matrix Revisit, where they did a documentary of making the Matrix, and then you have the Animatrix, which is basically American Japanese animated anthology of 9 short films based on the Matrix trilogy, which actually won 2 awards, including an Annie, and 4 other nominations. They actually had comic book series and comic books. There are 3 Matrix comic series that ran from 1999 to 2003. They're basically their web comics, 3 series of web comics, and then they had 2 volumes coming out from Matrix, the comic volumes, 2003, 2004. They actually had 3 major video games, Enter the Matrix in 2003. And actually, after we were talking about this last night of playing, this was the game that I actually played, Enter the Matrix, and this game sucked. And basically, the Metacritic scores had a 63 on GameCube, 53 on PC, 62 on PlayStation 2, and a 65 on Xbox. The game was terrible and full of bugs. That's rough. And then basically, I think I'm reading some of the reviews from old things. This is like one of the first games that came out unfinished, which is what some people were saying. Because it was so rushed out.
I mean, it played fine, like, when it wasn't terrible. But, like, when it was buggy, it was hella buggy.
Yeah.
Like, the first mission is, like, you get to be Neo in a video game. Like, in theory, like, this game should have been amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you just get to go fight a bunch of people as Neo. Like, that should be easy. But I think they just rushed it out, like you were saying, Matt.
Yeah.
To get it in that same time frame.
And then you have The Matrix Path of Neo in 2005. I actually did not play this one. It has 64 on PC, 69 on PS2, 73 on Xbox. I think this was kind of like after the phase of the Matrix was kind of wearing off. And then they actually had an MMORPG, The Matrix Online, that ran from 2005 to 2009. It had a 69 on PC.
I want them to like relaunch that, because I would love to play that.
So the problem with this is they launched it basically in peak WoW. WoW comes, basically this is about the time frame when there's so many MMOs come out. WoW basically hit 2004 and takes off. I think Lord of the Rings takes off in this time as well. So I think there was a few others that came out, but there was just so many that kind of start coming out that this one kind of...
So what I'm hearing is that they should relaunch it and let me go into the Matrix as a character that I create myself.
Sure.
Yes.
Adrian, did you ever see... I know you probably heard of this one. If you ever
I didn't even know this existed.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know this existed. Because at this time, I'm playing Star Wars Galaxies at this time.
Yep.
During this time frame. So, like, this is... Like Matt was saying, like, this is, like, EverQuest 2 Star Wars Galaxies. You know, World of Warcraft is getting off the ground. So I'm surprised it even lasted 4 years.
Yeah. That was one of the problems they said with it. Basically, they released it in basically peak MMORPG time, and you were kind of late. So, saying all that, that was basically all the media we had for them. Pretty simple. So let's get into why we're here. Basically, the but why those. And obviously, first one to talk about, as we are talking about all, is a successful franchise. And so there are 3 movies. They won 53 awards, 113 nominations. And here's where the fun part, where we always talk about my box office thing. It's actually the 40th highest grossing franchise worldwide, with $1.63 billion made. Which may not seem that impressive, but you consider there's only 3 films. They were all made within a 4-year span. And they actually haven't made a film since 2003. So if anybody knows about inflation, of how much movie has gone up from then. And then also the fact that they were rated R. It was a rated R franchise.
Yeah.
So basically, when looking at the top 40 ahead of them, the one that had like the most recent, like, or earliest, like, recent release, so like franchises that keep going up, one, they've also been around, so they've had a lot more movies. Or basically, like, Twilight and The Dark Knight came out, their last movies were in 2012. Everything else has had something like maybe last year, has something next year before, so they're still releasing movies. So the fact it's pretty high. Matrix Reloaded was the highest grossing R-rated movie until Deadpool.
Wow. Yeah.
Deadpool actually only made $40 million more than that movie. And that's
actually not a lot with inflation.
Yeah, it actually doesn't come close with inflation. So, and then as far as R-rated franchises, only Alien and Terminator are actually higher.
So, damn.
Yeah.
That's actually really good. I forget to factor in... We get so few R movies now.
Like, I forget to factor in ratings.
Yeah. No, it's, like I said, it's pretty crazy with, like, because, like I said, I was looking at this, and I was like, wow, this actually made a lot of money. And then when you adjust it, and you look at worldwide, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's only three films. It only lasted 4 years, you know, because I remember we had the joke when we did Iron Man that my ticket in 2008 was $5 for a movie ticket. This is 2003.
Yeah.
So.
Damn.
Yeah, it actually did pretty well. And then, Adrian, if you want to talk about some other fun facts from the Matrix reboot.
Oh, yeah. Just kind of looking here, like, I know that, because we Carol talked earlier, like, how these are both filmed at one time, and, like, while the second and third movie might not be the best, I did find a fun fact that after Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolution, they arranged to have 97% of the set materials recycled, and according to this article I read, in, like, 11,000 tons of concrete, steel, and lumber was all recycled, and they sent it to, like, Mexico and, like, other countries to build homes and stuff. So even if the third movie is god-awful, some good stuff did come out of it.
That's also just, like, it's actually sad if you think about it in perspective, how many massive movie sets just
wasted,
get thrown away. Yeah. It's actually, like, it's a cool fact, but then it's, like, a sad fact, because I'm thinking about, like, these massive assets that get built, and it's just like, oh, nobody gets to reuse this stuff.
I mean, so that's what we always think about when they send out all the t-shirts for sports teams. Like, apparently people think that the Buffalo Bills are the greatest franchise in history. Because when they make the sports team for the game, they make merchandise for both teams winning the Super Bowl. And then they just basically donate one of them to basically, I think it's mostly in Africa, a lot of the t-shirts, and then the other ones go to the actual team that won.
That's just so I don't know how accurate
this article. I mean, this is like a 2006 article, and I'll put it in the show notes so our patrons can check it out. But it also says, like, the makers of The Day After Tomorrow paid $200,000 to plant trees and other steps to offset the estimated 10,000 tons of carbon dioxide emissions caused by vehicles, generators, and other machinery used during its
production. I would believe that.
That's actually,
because, like, I know for The Matrix Reloaded, like, the highway chase sequence, like, that, they actually built that highway, right? They actually built it from scratch. Yeah, they built it from scratch. Because I think it was one of the most expensive sets built, because there was that one, and I like, it just popped in my head to see the airport, you know, the one with Tom, that movie with Tom Hanks? Mm-hmm. Like, that, they built, like, Steven Spielberg's, their crew built that airport to film that scene. So, like, when you talk about the amount of money that they spend to build sets, it's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yep. Can you imagine how much they spend now? I mean, we talk about movie films now.
I'm, like, getting a little sad here, because I'm just like, we're really
wasteful. Well, CG, like, the advent of CGI and VFX has really improved, like, the spending costs for films, then you think about the other things that they spend money on too, like transportation to sets and all that kind of stuff, and like powering the same machines that do that create the VFX. Like, that's a lot of electricity and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I really doubt 11,000 tons of concrete, steel, and lumber went into the making of Justice League. Jeez. They couldn't even find real fields, so I think I want to say we might be doing better, hopefully, with CGI, and, you know, we couldn't even find fields. So I think we're doing okay.
I think this is our first Justice League jab this year. Congrats, Adrian.
It's relevant. It's relevant.
It is.
So, moving on to the next but why, though, why kind of why we're all here and why we all remember and we're talking about this, is basically the movie The Matrix in 1999. Kind of like when we did Jurassic Park, the first one was groundbreaking and the rest we kind of forget or we know they exist. And same thing with The Matrix. The first one was groundbreaking and the rest one we can't think. So, as I said earlier, IMDb has this as 18th highest rated movie. It's on numerous top sci-fi movie lists, which are kind of weird, by the way, when I started looking at lists, because what the definition is of sci-fi is and what people count and don't count throws off the list weird.
Yeah, it's a subgenre, Matt.
No, sci-fi is a top genre, but it can't
be. Yeah, because it's also considered, The Matrix is also considered cyberpunk, right? So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was added to the National Film Registry in 2012, And basically, this is where Kate and Carolyn get to talk all about the great stuff. Basically, it had groundbreaking sound and visual effects for the use of slow motion camera and popularized what is known as bullet time. And then fighting technique of wire foo.
Yes.
Now you two have fun with that.
Yeah, I was like, you can start with it, Carolyn, because I know that this is one of the main reasons why you messaged me like an hour before we started recording saying, hey, you got a spot? So I'll let you start it.
So so the fight choreography for The Matrix, it was done by Yuen Wu Ping, who was the director for Drunken Master, Snakes in Eagle's Claw, and also did the action choreography for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, starring Michelle Yeoh. What up? But it was his film, Fist of Legend, starring Jet Li, which actually inspired the Wachowskis to hire him on as the main fight choreographer for The Matrix. And I knew a little bit about the background for the training schedule, but I just read up on it before we began recording. So, like, everyone knows, like, Keanu Reeves, like, he became, like really entrenched in martial arts after The Matrix. And one thing I've always found interesting, and I didn't even know, but I always figured when I watched the films, I always thought, like, their body structures actually fitted their choreography. And I swear to God, I always thought that Keanu Reeves' body was perfect for the fight sequences, for the fight choreography that was done for him. And also for Lawrence Fishburne. But then, lo and behold, I was reading up on it, and it was like, what do you know? Yuen Wu Ping actually choreographed the fight sequences to fit their body types and to fit their personalities. So I was actually kind of blown away. I was like, look at me being all smart and stuff.
I think I was also reading, and I realized they basically did 4 months of training, and he was like, man, these people are so
They were, like, super out of shape, and Keanu Reeves actually injured his cervical spine prior to pre-production. Yep. So, like, Wu Ping actually fit the choreography to fit his restricted movements, which is why in the film he seems stiff, because literally he was stiff. Like, if and like reading up, like, he didn't do much kicking, and then it was reflecting. Was like, that's so true. Keanu Reeves, most of his action choreography is like mostly like hand gestures and like shifting his body and like that kind of stuff, which actually fit.
Yeah, because I think outside of the dojo, you don't get a lot of actual leg movement at all. And even in the dojo, it's just him shuffling back and forth to match Fishburne's movements.
Yeah, like the end of the movie, you know, one of like the biggest things is him just using his arms, like blocking the bullets, or using one hand to block, you know, the agent's things. You know, so it's basically all upper body. Last half of the movie.
Like, who knew neck surgery would result in some of the most iconic Western cinema, action?
But that shows you how smart and how smart Yuen Wu Ping is as a choreographer, because, like, he realized, okay, he's not going to force them to do what they're not able to do. He worked to suit. And by doing that, as you said, he created some of the most iconic action choreography fight scenes in cinematic history. And, like, kudos to him. I'm sure there's some people that would have been like, you know what, I'm gonna tap out, find another choreographer. But he worked to suit the cast, and like that's to me is amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's like one of those things that we have to mention too, is like, because he's a Hong Kong fight choreographer and director, and like
Wachowskis were very big fans of
They were heavily influenced by Hong Kong cinema and at Japanimation. Yep. Well, back then we called it Japanimation, but now we call it anime. Right,
yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, and I know, Carolyn, you tweet about this a lot, and I know I've had a lot of issues with it, especially with the recent Captain Marvel movie, but Western cinema, when it comes to fight editing or choreography, a lot of the times they don't take into account the actors doing the moves. It's like, oh, we're going to do this, and then we'll cut away, and we'll do this. And what, for me, at least in what I've seen in my action-loving life, The Matrix kind of stands as like this touchstone where it's like this big budget movie can be heavily just fight choreography based and like have it done well, and a lot of it is because of how amazing Wu Ping is as a fight choreographer. And like, also just to point it out too, like, probably a lot of your favorite Jet Li movies he also choreographed, because he did Danny the Dog, which was unleashed in called Unleashed in the US. It's one of my favorite movies. He also did Fearless. He also did he ended up doing The Grandmaster and Ip Man 3. He did both volumes of Kill Bill, and he did Kung Fu Hustle. So like, this man has like
a large, yeah, plus drunken master. I mean, come on.
And fun fact, his student Tiger Chen actually became Keanu Reeves' best friend and one of his mentors. And Tiger Chen was actually in the movie that I just reviewed, Triple Threat, which was directed by Jesse V. Johnson, who, as we'll add a link, I managed to interview. But the reason I bring up that is because Yong Woo-ping, because he is a martial artist and a fight choreographer and a director, he understood how to choreograph to suit the vision of the film. But also the Wachowskis, they respected him enough as a choreographer to let him do what he needed to do. And they actually, and the filming was done to accommodate that. And in talking to Jesse V. Johnson, like, when he was working with the fight choreographers, he's like, he let the fight choreographer and the actors do what they needed to do. He's like, they started out their stuff. He didn't interject. He didn't interrupt. And like, and that's why I think, like, I think a lot of Western action films that feature martial arts, I think, and I say this a lot on Twitter, is I think the directors do not either respect the choreographers and the fighters enough to give them the space to do what they need to do, and therefore when they're editing, they like chop it up too much because they don't know how to film action sequences. And but when you have directors who know how to film action sequences and who trust the choreographers and the fighters to do what they need to do, you get action sequences for The Matrix, because a lot of action films like just before The Matrix and after, like if they're produced in Western by Western production companies, which The Matrix was done, like the action is horribly like edited. And like the Matrix, and like if you look at the films like coming out, like Triple Threat, and then you have Who Assassins that's coming out, and Warriors, like, and even then you have like the Ip Man series, which Yong Woo-ping worked on, like you can tell the difference. And like I think that's what sets the Matrix apart a lot, is because the directors were heavily influenced by Asian martial arts films. They knew enough to like how they knew how to go about editing, which is one of the things that a lot of people don't like give the film enough credit for, is the editing itself for the fight sequences. It's like,
yeah. And I think that that's also like a really important thing to say, because like when we think back on, and when we look at like some of the most iconic fight scenes on television that we've had like in the last 5 years, you automatically think about things like Into the Badlands, but you also think about things, but I mean, and that has Hong Kong cinema, yep, and it's blood, right? But if you think about something that's completely, almost completely Western, like Daredevil, the reason that works, and when you speak to the directors on individual episodes and you speak with the fight choreographer, his name is Drew Brewster, for which one? I believe. For Daredevil, he also does, he's Captain America's stunt double and also the fight choreographer from Daredevil season one to season three. One of the things that the directors talk about, and one of the things that the fight choreographers talk about, is exactly what Carolyn's saying. It's this idea that, like, don't over-direct. Like, if this isn't what you're suited for, you need to let it happen organically and then figure out how to work with it. And for me, like, I think I ended up seeing, like, I mean, I had seen, like, the old Jackie Chan movies, right? And I had seen Enter the Dragon and the Bruce Lee movies. But I think The Matrix, for me, actually started my love of going into more of the, to going into, like, Hong Kong cinema, or going into, like, foreign films to get that type of action quality. Because after The Matrix, I didn't feel like I was getting that from a lot of things. And I also just have to give a shout out to Cradle to the Grave, because it was also choreographed by Woo-ping. And like the Jet Li 2000s movies are amazing. And I will rewatch the one, Romeo Must Die, and Cradle to the Grave nonstop.
Cradle to the Grave, while story wise, it is kind of weak, and acting wise, because like, let's face it, DMX wasn't that great, but I love Cradle to the Grave because the fight sequences in that film are amazing. And there's always one fact I always remember is in the behind the scenes video, the director was saying there's a scene where Jet Li is fighting this other guy. I can't remember his name, but and I think it's amazing to notice is they actually, what we watch in the film is actually a slow down rate of Jet Li's punches, because his hands were so fast they actually had to slow them down. They actually have slowed down the frame rate in the film so that you could actually see him land the punches. And so, like, that's just fun, gently fat. But yes.
So that's why, though. The Matrix brings in all of this stuff. Like, The Matrix kind of makes Western cinema be like, oh,
we can do this.
Yeah, which kind of like you were talking about of like almost like winning awards. When it came to like, I obviously didn't look at all the awards, but from like out of the 40-something awards they won or whatever, majority of them are all from like sound and visual effects and like editing, yeah, and film editing. Like, it's not like Keanu Reeves was out here winning Oscars. It was literally all the basically effects teams.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that this does right before you move on, Matt, is like Carol was saying, is there's just too much jump cutting. Too much jump cutting. And I think like the excuse that I see a lot like on the internet and stuff is, well, it's Liam Neeson and he's like 87 years old and he can't do fighting. We just talked about how Keanu Reeves' back was broken.
Yeah, he has surgery just before.
Have you seen have you seen Jackie Chan in The Foreigner? Anybody who makes an argument about age?
Thank you.
Watch Jackie Chan. He kills it.
Even if you get like someone who doesn't know how to do it, you can edit things and train people to kind of do what you need them to do.
Exactly. If you give enough. If you care enough, because none of the cast of the Matrix knew martial arts before. Not Keanu Reeves, not Carrie Ann Moss, not Keanu.
Yeah, you think Loris Fishburne is actually, you know, come on.
That's why I said the first 4 months, I believe, were just all nothing but just training for this round. Yeah, so they talk about basically, they talk about the end of like Keanu Reeves basically, after surgery and stuff, when they knew this, he basically trained himself like intensely, and they give him prep for how much he was like actually training like through the injury to get back to everything. And he actually apparently gave like 2/3 of his salary away from after this training to basically all the special effects and visual effects people.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff, because I know he gave away like motorcycles to like cast and crew as well. I think after the second, I think it was after they wrapped up filming for the second and third, he like, I remember it was a big thing, he bought like motorcycles for like everybody. And I'm like, yes.
You know why? Because Keanu Reeves is a vampire and doesn't care about mortal wealth.
So before we move on real fast, talking about this bullet time, I guess, slow motion camera thing. Apparently it had been used once from what I saw in like 1980s, but it never, like, nobody cared at the time. But then apparently, obviously, they used it, and obviously it became for the next, like, we saw the movie Inception, which is basically all, basically the Matrix.
Bullet time is... So I love the fight choreography in Wonder Woman, but the slow motion in that movie is so
unnecessary. It was unnecessary.
Huh? Yes. Yeah, it was so much. And I think that that's definitely what ends up happening. Like, people use bullet time and slow-mo. Like, they don't know how to use it to accent, right? Like, they just oversalt the food.
Like, if you're gonna, like, and, like, mentioning things like Wonder Woman, and it should fit the story, because, like, the Matrix, like, that mode of visual storytelling fit the story, because it's about disseminating reality, right? Like, going from hyper reality to normalcy, because I guess you would say the Matrix is reality, quotes unquote. But then the like going outside of the Matrix into like Zion, like you have they like if you notice this and see that in the Zion, like they don't use bullet time special effects in Zion. Like they use other stuff for like the Sentinels and stuff, but like because it didn't make sense to use it in Zion, they use it in the Matrix because it fit the Matrix. But you're gonna use something in like Wonder Woman in that scene you're talking about. Like there's a scene that everyone in the cinema laughed at when I watched it, when she was running. People are like, is she on a treadmill? What is happening? Because it doesn't match. like what? Why?
But obviously, also, from all this, they definitely changed the way action films were done.
Yes.
Especially when movies coming after this. Like, it did everything.
So, I do want to give a shout out to Equilibrium, which is the movie with Christian Bale and Gung Fu.
Gung Kata.
Yeah, Gung Kata. Yeah.
I love that film, like, so much.
Yeah, have to point that out. That
very
is
underrated
heavily...
movie that I didn't surprise.
So it is. I don't know why people, I mean, I guess I kind of know why people like it, but it's a good movie, and the fight
it's so good. It's,
so
it's
good.
A good movie. It has good acting, and the story, I like the story, because it's about people fighting back against the man, the machine, capitalism. Like, what's not the, and, like, the water balloon.
Yeah.
And, like, come on. The puppy, my heart. I love that movie.
All right. So moving on from basically, obviously, how much groundbreaking it was for visuals and why it's actually restored, to kind of like the theme to this movie, basically they grew influences, we talked about obviously thing, but they grew influences for religious influences throughout all the movies. Obviously, we talked about four. We have The Chosen One. they built, they mentioned throughout the first movie of like they built the first Matrix as a paradise, but most rejected it, which leads to them building on this idea of human nature requires suffering and we require chaos and struggle. They do a lot of this, I guess it's called
epistemology.
Yeah.
Epistemology.
But basically, yeah. It's a theory of knowledge. They go through a lot of that. They explore a lot of the Keanu Reeves is now a religion. they explore a lot of the Christianity themes in a lot of the first movie, like suffering, sacrifice, what is knowledge, and real and stuff. And then in the later movies, they go into more deeper Eastern religions with, like, the body dying, the soul is eternal, reincarnation into other forms and physical stuff. And which always lead to, like, Neo basically wanting to save Zion and free the people from within the Matrix, and Agent Smith wanting to, like, basically kill and destroy everything from both humans and machines. And they both want the same thing, to stop suffering, but on polar opposites.
And, like, even down to just choosing the name Zion, that's mm-hmm. also a religious reference. Yep. And then, like, on, like, the epistemology thing, like, epistemology is, like, I remember studying it when I was in grad school. Or, like, we always had, like, an epistemology section. And it's, like, it's the theory of how mm-hmm. we know what we know and why we know what we know. And it's super convoluted, but it, like, it makes perfect sense when you, like, map it onto the Matrix. That's, like, all that this is, like, dissecting. It's dissecting different strings of knowledge, which ultimately leads to, like, these larger, grander examples being
put onto it. Things that make your head hurt if you think about it too much.
Yes.
Oh, well, we're about to get merrily make your head hurt in the next But Why, though, if Kate's done with religious aspects.
I'm done. That's all, those are the only things I wanted to talk about, because, like, I want to talk about Plato. So.
All right, so basically we're going to the next part, But Why, though, is basically the philosophy of the Matrix. Kind of like Carolyn said earlier, at this time, because of this movie and the core and how popular it was, everybody started mm-hmm. questioning reality. And then, so basically, there's kind of a few things that go on here. We have Descartes, which I kind of said at the beginning of the base question.
Descartes,
whatever. It's some guy from the 17th century. He'll be fine.
Yeah, and I have, like, two of his books on my shelf downstairs because I still had to read him. Descartes, man.
Yeah, you have to say Descartes.
My bad. Descartes.
There we go.
Okay. Based on Descartes, as I started this whole entire thing, it's based on the philosophical question of what is real. So they kind of go with Descartes' evil demon, which I'm kind of just basically read some lines to try to best explain this. If you're a philosopher, good luck with this. You probably know this more than me. If you get lost, welcome to the Matrix. It's kind of like when Morpheus is talking to Neo. Have you ever had a dream, Neo, that you were so sure was real? What if you were unable to awake from that dream? How would you know the difference between a dream and a real world? And then Morpheus kind of describes, like, his belief of what reality is as far as a human experience concerned, is composed of electrical and synaptic activity in the central nervous system. So from Descartes' way of saying this, this is, like, the easiest way I could break this down of finding this stuff. I read, like, 5 different, like, study papers. So another thing the Matrix did was basically give everybody an entire field of philosophy, a bunch of dissertations. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is, actually. So at my, at the AAR, the American Academy of Religion, one of the panels that I went to mm-hmm. was on the Matrix and how it influences theological, like, building after it. Because, like, one of the things people don't realize is that a lot of preachers or, like, any sort of, like, faith leader in any religion, they use pop culture to try and become, like, get closer to their communities and stuff. And so when you have themes like the Matrix or anything like that, it influences them, which then makes scholars pay attention to be like, oh wow, you're doing this, and then scholars talk about it.
Yeah,
a whole bunch.
Yeah, so kind of the way what Guitar said in this is basically he's suspicious of his knowledge that he obtained through his senses and his own beliefs, and he became convinced that one must use one's mind rather than one's senses to obtain knowledge about the world. In a system of knowledge constructed by Descartes, perception is unreliable as a means of gathering information, and the mental process of deduction is the only way to acquire real knowledge.
Basically, like Sherlock.
Yeah, And this entire thing is built off of, I mean, you're going to go into it, but it's built off of, I think it's like the theory of forms. It has to do with the idea of mm-hmm. what is real, and, like, it's from Plato, and when you get into it, I'll expand on it, but it's this idea that kind of, like, everything we're surrounded by, we
yeah.
can't know. And the only way we know it is through thinking. It's the reactions that get sent to us and our mind processes anything that is outside of our mind processing it. It's not good. So, like, essentially, it'd be like, okay, I am...
Well, I can just go to the updated version, which will probably give you a better example.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, actually, there's an updated version of this whole entire thing, which I don't remember exactly the time frame, but it's called Brain in a Vat. And it's kind of like what we talk about with Futurama. A brain is disembodied from the body and put in a vat of life-sustaining liquid, kind of like the heads were in Futurama. And you connect it up to wires, and you send impulses to a supercomputer. And basically, does the brain know it is a brain in a vat, or is it in the skull?
Yeah. So that's kind of like the whole... So that's the thing with the Matrix, like, going with talking about epistemology and that kind of stuff, like... When this, like, because I'm Christian, right? And I'm Seventh-day Adventist, but I remember when The Matrix came out, like, everyone was talking about this film, and it was discussed in church. Like, we discussed it in what we call AYA, which is, evening session after church in the evenings where we discuss, like, just any topic that we wanted to talk about. And The Matrix was, like, a huge discussion because we even though it's talking about perception and everything, we were, like, discussing, okay, we kind of linked it into, like, why do you believe what you believe? How do you know that there's a God? Why do you believe that there's a God and that kind of stuff? And it was super interesting at that time because it was, like, it made people think about religion and faith. Not necessarily faith based on, like, God, but faith in anything. How important it is to, like, know what you believe, whether you believe in God or if you or whatever religion you are. And it was super interesting at that time because, as I said, when I watched the Animatrix, like, that thing made me, like, literally doubt reality. I had, like, nightmares. I'm like, oh my God, am I in the Matrix? That kind of thing. You're like, well, like, am I really awake? You know, like, because you know that when you have, like, a dream within a dream within a dream, you're always like, but what if this is, like, the ultimate long-running dream? Who's to say I'm not really in a pod somewhere, right? And they think that's why the Matrix is still, to this day, is one of the most significant films ever made because it has such a long-reaching effect because it went into philosophy, into religion, into, like, faith and that kind of stuff. So, like, I think that's why it will always be a touchstone in pop culture. And yeah, like, sometimes I like why do we believe what we believe? Like, that's one of the most fundamental things about being human, right? Like, yeah. Why do we believe certain things?
So the funny thing you brought up about that, because you talked about religion and, like, using that, what do you believe? Like, Descartes, like, reading about, like, with him, he was like, I have no
arms. Yes, no, no.
I have no arms.
So that's the thing. I hate it. So, like, I hate reading Descartes and I hate reading Foucault. Those are the two people I hate reading because they're really weird. They're all over the place. But my simplest way to describe Descartes and, the easiest way that I explain it to, like, students and stuff is essentially, like, his entire thing is that what you know is the truth. Or what your brain knows is the truth. So if you drink a glass of poison and all of your senses tell you that it's not poison because it doesn't smell,
it can't it affect
looks
you.
Fine, your best friend gave it to you, but then your body ingests it and your mind processes it. It's like, oh no, this is poison. Like, it's proof that, like, you can't really trust anything else you pick up unless you think about it, deduce it, and come to it. Now, if you were thinking, you would be like, oh, well, I pissed my friend off. Oh, you know, why is my friend serving me this? We can go into Coco here. Like, why is he coming up to me over here and giving me a shot right before I leave?
Exactly.
He's angry at me. Like, essentially, like, in order to maintain reality, you have to consciously and critically think about everything. Descartes isn't used so much now in so much as he's referenced because he's a building block. But it's required reading. So any sort of liberal arts thing that is going to understand how people act, behave, believe, or think, you're gonna have to at least familiarize yourself with the theory of.
Thinking about him kind of makes me think of Sherlock because based on the series, not going from the books, I'm going from the series, like that's basically how Sherlock is. Like, he's disseminating information all the time. He's always taking information. He doesn't trust anything that anyone says, or he doesn't even trust his own senses. He only believes and trusts things that he can figure out for himself. He's like, I know this is fine because I'm going to observe the effects. He's like, I know this person is coming to kill me because I'm going to observe what this person is going to kill me. I'm going to disseminate information that I'm seeing. So it kind of reminds me of that. And then there's the philosophy. I can't remember who said it. It's like, if a tree falls in a forest and if there's no one there to hear it, does it really make a sound? Right, so it's about that. Yeah. It's like trust what you can understand and not what you can see, which is kind of a crappy way to go because, like, if I see a hole there, I'm going to avoid the hole. I'm not going to question if it's a hole or not. I'm going to walk around it.
And this is why Descartes was like, I have no hands.
Yeah. Which kind of leads to the next part, which we already kind of mentioned, Plato, of this is also kind of took over not only, like, in philosophy, but just in general pop culture of red pill versus blue pill. And so obviously we have the red pill, where Morpheus says, you stay in Wonderland, I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes, where life is of harsh knowledge, desperate freedom, brutal truths of reality. Blue pill, where the story ends, you wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe, the life of luxurious security, tranquil happiness, and blissful ignorance of illusion. And he ends it with, I just like to want to end with a thing, remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing.
But that scene is really good, yes. And, like, Morpheus is just a really good character. But
so this kind of leads into Plato's allegory of the cave, which is kind of the whole entire sense of the Matrix in some sense. As much as we talked about the car, we have Plato's allegory of the cave. Essentially, people live in a cave in a fixed position, and all they ever know is what is inside of the cave. So on what basis are you to expect anything outside of the cave? So how do you know what reality really is?
But it also goes beyond just living in the cave, right? Yeah. So, like, essentially, like, the way the theory goes is that you live in a cave. You're in a cave, and you have fire as your source of light. And only things that you could see are reflected in the shadow casted by the light from the fire. And so you never understand what the true form of something is, unless you see it directly. But the what he said was essentially, the majority of everything that we experience in the world is a shadow of something, and we don't see it, like, head on. And so this is kind of where Descartes builds all of his stuff on it. I'm going to Google it, but I'm pretty sure it's theory of forms. And that's where the cave analogy is used.
Yeah, basically the allegory cave, which kind of lead to, if you want to Google or want me to go to the next part.
Yeah, it's the theory of forms. Yes. Okay. It's the theory of forms. So the cave is a piece of it. Right. And then you have the cave, you have you within the cave, and then you have you that is real and you can see your hand, and then you have the fire that projects a shadow, and you have to understand what the shadow is, but you can never know what the shadow is 100%. So you have non-physical idea and physical.
Yeah
It's been a long time. I've been out of grad school. Now you're confusing yourself. Yeah, I've been out of grad school for 2 years. I just know that, like, that Plato was actually a thing that I found really interesting.
This kind of leads to Plato, the next part of basically Plato's analogy of the sun. We talked about the fire. The sun is a metaphor for the nature of reality and knowledge concerning it. The sun, its knowledge, light itself is true and understanding. So basically, somebody drags you out of the cave from basically having that fire source to where you now can see the actual sun and what it brings to you. So in this case, you're unplugged from the Matrix and stepping out of the cave. To the first step of knowledge or gnosis, which lead to enlightenment of where they get. To wrap all
it's enlightenment.
Obviously, these things are very hard, and these people spent wrote so many papers and so many books on this stuff, but to do it in a very small concept.
Yeah, I will say this: the theory of forms is something that people do still use now.
Yes.
It's one of those things that was vague enough to actually have a practical use in many different fields. Because Descartes went, I have no hands, and took it too off the rails, and it didn't age well. But there's a reason that, you know, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle are consistently used, is because they made applicable universal observations.
Yeah, so all this is wrapped up into a kung fu movie.
And it's amazing.
Yes.
Adrian, are you confused and lost in this? Because I know this took me a long time.
What I was going to say is that this isn't another instance of the biome incident that we had before. Like, I literally know all of these things because I used to be a philosophy major for 2 years in college. And this whole conversation is why I did not continue in philosophy. Because these conversations are too convoluted and... I got tired of reading about people who said, because I can't see it behind me, it doesn't exist. And I've got no hands. I close my eyes, everything is gone because I can't see it. So therefore, I just got to get that presentation. So everything that Kate's talking about is stuff that I learned about while I was also in college. And it's crazy that this stuff is still in here. And I'm like sitting here thinking, I don't know if we get like another movie that really challenges like that kind of stuff until like, I don't know, like Inception. Maybe. Like that's really it. Maybe The Prestige, because you have like the whole cloning thing. Like who is the actual
was
person?
Was it a twin? That kind of because, thing.
Like, I think like the only other movie between like then is like The Prestige, and then for me, because The Prestige has like a whole thing of like, are you just a sum of your experiences? Really, so if you clone yourself and this person goes over here and has different experiences, is that the same person you really were before? All that stuff. So like that, and then like Inception are really the only movies I could think of that kind of have like this kind of philosophy driven kind of thing. Backed up with like crazy stuff going on.
I feel like hold on.
Before I think
on top of my head.
So the funny thing about when you mentioned that is literally when they were making this movie, it was a hard sell.
It was super hard to sell because
Warner Brothers took a chance on this. They actually made an entire like comic like book anime strip of like showing this entire thing laid out to sell it to people.
Hold on. I just gotta say something. The Prestige. You think it was a clone? I thought it was his twin.
No, well, he was.
I gotta watch over that film again.
The one like where he clicked. Because he's in the thing.
Oh, you're talking about Hugh Jackman. I thought you were talking about the I'm Things character. Because I was like, what?
No.
Oh, okay. Because you just blew my mind. It was going to be, but wait. Okay. Yeah, that's what you're talking about. I think you're talking about Christian Bale's character. Because you just made me pause. I was like, hold on. Okay, yes.
I mean, there's the fountain. There's there, too.
The fountain's one.
Yeah, the fountain's for sure.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz.
What's up with Hugh Jackman?
Wait, The Fountain. Let me look at that. I don't think I've ever watched that. But going in,
it is okay. You need to watch it. It's one of my favorite movies.
I may have watched it because sometimes I watch films and then I just forget the names of them. So
it has to do with the Tree of Life and people across times.
Yeah.
It's so good. Would you compare it to like? Because you mentioned Inception. I wouldn't compare it to Inception because Inception is more about personal reality, right? Because whereas Matrix and stuff is dealing with reality on the outside, the Inception is more about personal inner disseminating your inner reality. Like
I'll just ask you what every other philosopher I ever read about in college said. Well, what is reality, Carolyn? It doesn't matter because everything could be someone else's reality. Matrix. So maybe
we're all just cogs in someone else's wheel.
But I will say that was the thing that threw me off because I was reading the car and I was like, this is interesting. Started going, I have no hands. And I totally see why everybody's like, I don't get it. I have no hands. I have no legs. I am a corpse. So, fun fact before we get here, before we go on to the final part, which kind of like came from the Matrix of like design of a paper. And I read two scientific papers on this thing or whatever published this. Basically, the Wachowskis, they wanted all of their cast members to actually be able to understand and explain the Matrix, and so they required them to do all these readings. The first person they wanted to play Neo was not Keanu Reeves, but Will Smith. Yeah. And he was like, I don't understand this shit. And so he went and played Wild Wild West.
But
because he says he didn't get the concept.
That's
why he went to Wild Wild
Will
West?
Smith,
yeah, you didn't know that?
Neo?
Yeah.
Yes, but he was like, I don't understand this at all.
I knew that. I knew that he could have been Neo. My whole thing is he said, I'm not going to learn new philosophy. I'm going to go make Wild Wild West. Which I am one of the few people who did not realize that people hated Wild Wild West.
It's not that. It's not that.
I love Wild Wild West.
I'm okay.
I love the
theme
song, though. I love the theme song to Wild Wild West. The film itself.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they made him do that. But it also kind of makes sense because, like, isn't Jada, like, a Scientologist in, like, he kind of has to be a Scientologist.
Wait, is Jada a Scientologist?
I think the whole thing with a Scientology and them is like when, because he's friends with like Tom Cruise, I think like they were introducing them to the whole thing. And then, as far as I know, Will Smith did not become a Scientologist.
She was a Scientologist. She's no longer a Scientologist.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
Yeah. He's like, get this.
But you didn't know. That's a famous thing in like where people are like it's one of the biggest things where who could have had one of the most famous roles and like they gave it up, like Will Smith turning down Neo is like one of those things where people were like, you could have been this amazing franchise.
That's a whole different movie in my head with Will Smith in it and not Keanu Reeves.
As I said, that's why I was saying earlier. Like, I think, you know, there's some actors you know are meant to play certain roles. Like you would say, Ryan Reynolds is meant to play Deadpool. I am convinced in my body, with every fiber of my being, that Keanu Reeves was always meant to play Neo. Lawrence Fishburne was meant to play Morpheus because I cannot see anyone playing those characters. Like, even his, like, as I said, like, his body shape is like, when you look at that body shape, you look like someone who's having an existential crisis right now. That's what you look like. Right? Because like, you look having an existential crisis. Because if you look at Speed, like, I swear to you, when The Matrix first came out, I could not believe that was Keanu Reeves, because when you would watch Speed, like, his body shape is completely different. In Speed, he looks shorter, he's bulkier, he looks tan. Like, he could have passed for Latino when in Speed. Like, I, confession time, I always thought Keanu Reeves was half Latino until I found out he was actually half Asian, like, you know, half Hawaiian. He's like, and I was like, wait, what? I thought he was half Latino. Lo and behold, he was not, because he looks like, in Speed, if you look at his face and his thing, like, he looks like he could pass for half Latino.
So I will say this, there are a lot of Latinos who do look kind of Asian, and a lot of it's because
there's that, but then his body shape changes.
So it's not that far, it's not that far.
Yeah, right, but then his body shape changed, he looks taller, he's leaner, and like, you look at him, I'm like, that's Neo.
Right. Yeah, so I'll put it in the show notes of the episode, but I'm actually looking at a picture of Keanu Reeves from Speed and Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, and
when I saw it in the cinema, and it was like, what? That's Keanu Reeves? Seriously? I could not believe it.
And now he's playing John Wick and still looks the same.
The immortal.
But there was a... I'll say there's one more reading that they were supposed to do that I didn't quite understand, and it was by a 1981 French philosopher called Simulacra and Simulation, which is based on reality, symbols, and society. They were supposed to understand and read that book, and obviously I pulled a Will Smith because I didn't understand
that one.
But that was another one that was definitely influenced. But yeah, all the cast was supposed to be able to read and be able to explain if you ask somebody, what is The Matrix?
And it makes sense. It kind of makes sense because, like, imagine them having to, like, do all of these press interviews and they don't understand. That's like me when I have to interview people. Like, I do research and, like, you know, you read upon them and, like, they have to, like, and I do research on them and the film. Like, imagine, like, them doing press interviews. Like, so what's The Matrix about? Tell us your character's thing. And they were like, he's a guy who wakes up in an alternate reality. And it's not exactly that he wakes up in an alternate reality. They have to be able to, like, sell people on the idea of this film, right? Because that's part of their job as actors, to sell the film. And, like, if they don't know what the heck is going on, people are going to be like, this film is going to confuse me. I'm not going to watch this. But if they sound like they know what they're talking about, like, it makes perfect... And it also helped with probably the dialogue, because a lot of the dialogue is, like, as Matt was referencing, is... based on, like, philosophy, so, like, they gotta be able to sell the lines too. Like,
it's one of those things that I think it's what also, like, breaks down from, like, I think it's the reason why certain actors, like, live in genres, is because they really understand the material that they're getting into, and that's why they excel, because they take it seriously. And I think it's the reason why, like, the fact that, like, Jordan Peele gives his actors, like, a list of horror movies to watch to get into the headspace, like, that's, I think, like, it's one of those things that helps. So, and I mean, I kind of always thought that the Wachowskis were like that, because they kind of, like, they go all in on their movies all the time, for better or for worse. But they always put that type of dedication into it.
So this led from The Matrix, after they do it, another argument that came up and kind of been developed from here, called the simulation argument, which is where we'll end up, because this is, I think, is fun and fascinating and probably the most intriguing concept of the entire Matrix that came out of the movie. Of, are we living in a computer simulation?
Because basically
they took one of the following three statements are true. It have to be no matter what. The human species is very likely to go extinct before reaching a post-human stage, would be one. Any post-human civilization is extremely unlikely to run a significant number of simulations of their evolutionary history or variation. So basically they would go back and see where humans are. Or three, we are most certainly living in a computer simulation, basically follows the belief that there's a significant chance that we will one day become post-humans who run ancestral simulations. It's false unless we are currently living in a simulation. A number of other consequences of this result is also discussed.
Yeah.
So basically, what the hell does all this mean? Humankind goes extinct before reaching post-human level. Number two, post-humans decide not to run any simulations on humans for various reasons, whether it be ethics, resources, or they're not interested. Or three, we are living in a simulation in the cosmos and everything we are observing is just a tiny piece of totality of a physical existence of what we know is reality. And kind of like what you're talking about in Inception, we could actually be running simulations within simulations of we may not get quite to post-human, but we are running simulations on our actual ancestral history to see what we did for our evolutionary thing within possibly another sense.
So,
if you ever watch Rick and Morty of that sense with the car battery.
Yes, but so this actually, like, I like this theory, and I think that it's something that I think other sci-fi have been able to kind of, like, utilize in different ways, and I say that specifically because the last season of Black Mirror, there's an episode of it where the entire episode are these two characters who they live in a world where essentially you get paired off with somebody and like you have like a dedicated, like if I were to pull this up and it would be my watch would be like, oh, you have to be with so and so and you're going to be together for 6 months and only 6 months. You meet that person, you go to a house, you're with them for 6 months, you leave, and then eventually you end up finding the one. Well, these two people get matched up with each other, fall in love with each other, but then their time is done and they get matched up with other people. And by the time their matching day comes where they're supposed to get married, they escape. And when they escape the area, the enclosed area, it essentially shoots them up like a little red dot into this thing. And it sees, and in the end, it says 99.9% chance, 99.9% match. Which meant that, like, in the, whatever many simulations, they escaped together that many times, and there was, like, only one time that they didn't. And so it like, to me, thinking about, like, the way that the Matrix has kind of influenced this idea of, like, whether or not we're in a simulation or not, it's carried over the pop culture heavily. But then I also know that isn't there, like, I know that there are some mathematicians who have, like, done the math to see how many.
No, they've actually, so basically where I read this entire dissertation paper, that published paper, they do all the math for you.
Yeah.
There's all math involved of what we do. So basically you're talking about, like, they actually have put down to, like, were you thinking, like, there's, like, a me simulation where they isolate it with selective simulations to where it's, like, only one person.
And you told me liberal arts degrees were useless. What is this math degree used for?
And they did, like, you know, like, basically do selective simulations, like you said, where like one person does it, where if you think you are in a simulation yourself, it has to be like basically 10 times billion more chances that you're not in a simulation for a me selective simulation versus an entire computer simulation.
Yeah. but
I have no hands.
You mentioned Black Mirror. That's, I think the episode was the one with the date, because I think that was the one with not Google and Bathra, was that her? No, it was someone else. But there is also the latest one, Bandersnatch, is kind of like that, where like you have, it's like the guy was filming a show based on the decisions that you, the viewer, make, and the characters make themselves. Like, you, he either turns up to be a murderer, he turns up to be in a television show filming his life and that kind of stuff. And because they're, and it's interesting because when I first started doing it, I actually stopped making decisions up to a point to see what the show would do. And I'm like, it does, and I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter what decisions I make, because the outcome has already been determined based on what they filmed, right? So I'm like, you want me to decide what the characters do, but guess what, Netflix? I'm not going to fall for it, because you already filmed these. You already filmed what the actors are going to do. You already have predetermined outcomes. Therefore, I will not bend to your will, Netflix, because you're controlling me, right?
So you broke the
That's what I did. I was like, I rebel against the machine. You, Netflix, will not make me make choices. All right? So it's kind of like that. It's like,
there's an entire field of all.
Yeah, those kind of things are like mind-bending sometimes. It's fun, but then you like start to think too much about it. Like, I refuse to think about the idea of eternity, because it literally gives me a headache. I'm like, I will not. I refuse.
That's how you get into an existential crisis.
So the one thing I do take about the simulation argument, and I kind of been thinking about it, I don't know how much it works, but basically we've kind of done the math and whatnot of basically, are we ever going to basically find aliens? Or are we going to reach another intelligent life form?
Oh,
for
sure.
So they've done the math of basically...
The Drake equation.
Well, not just the Drake equation. Well, part of the Drake equation, but basically the last part of the Drake equation of basically our extinction. And basically they've calculated where we have to live long enough without going extinct to actually get the technology and resources
ourselves.
To then be interplanetary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it kind of goes with this whole... They do kind of simulate... They run a bunch of simulations to see whether humans can actually make it to be interplanetary based on the conditions. And it's not even like, oh, technology and stuff. It's whether basically do we go extinct or not.
We also, like, never make it past a certain point.
Too. Yeah, we've actually never made it based on simulations, sadly.
It's depressing. But, yeah, but, like, I always believe, like, we are not the only ones. The truth is out there, as they say X-Files. There are other beings. This universe is, our universe itself is far too vast for us to be the only beings. But we're probably the most destructive beings ever created. So, like, the other aliens would be like, these humans, stay far away.
Yeah. So that's what's kind of like why I found it with that, because that's kind of how they kind of take this of like, this has to be grant, this like these following have to be true. Like, we will meet somebody because of statistics and everything else.
Yeah.
I think it's a fun concept. I don't know if we're living in a simulation. I guess nobody's hit me up on a computer. So
the feds are watching.
Have you had to follow a rabbit anywhere?
Nope.
I'm suspicious as hell. I'm like, someone's like, follow the white rabbit. I'm like, you know what? No.
So, Adrian, are you in a simulation?
Does it matter?
In some ways, no, honestly.
I go back to my whole problem with studying philosophy thing is, does it matter? Does it change? Like, if I'm in a simulation, does it change the fact that we're recording this right now?
No, because we have already done it.
A good time? Probably not. No.
I mean, apparently it affected us earlier when Carolyn got booted out of the simulation.
The Matrix does not like me.
But that's the funny thing about, like, that's the funny thing about the paper, the way the paper ends up, if we are actually living in simulation, please don't go insane.
the way that I see it is that, because it's like one of those things, like, do you go down the rabbit hole? Like, do you want to know what's on the other side? Blah, 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 blah. Like, I've never had certain kinds of foods, but I know the foods that I like get me through just fine.
You're like, I don't know.
So, do I really need to try those other foods? No. I'm good with what I got. So, you know, as long as I'm doing okay, don't take
me out. And see, you know, you're saying that, like, I don't know why, but us, Jordan Peele's film popped it in my head, because I've been speculating that it kind of has that kind of feel to it. To me, because I'm looking at, because he's, like, talking about, like, two realities of yourself. So you have the red, the normal, and then you have the dark side. And I was telling Philippe, who's my co-host for Saturday Night Sci-Fi, I told him my theory for the film, even though I have not seen us, is I feel like who we think are the bad people, which is the dark side, are actually the good ones, and the people who look normal are actually they're the bad selves, and they're like duking it out, trying to see whose reality is going to become, whose reality is going to win out. And like, I always find these kind of things interesting, because like, just like when just dreaming, and like when you think about the things that we assume are the things our brains are capable of as human beings, like creating a whole reality as we dream, like you know, like, and like these kind of discussions and everything fascinate me, and I love these kind of films that make me think. Some that I don't need to think too much, but I like films that make me think.
Do you have hands?
Because I think he was just being. I think he was just being lazy and trying to shirk responsibility, because if someone says, Descartes, I need you to move this cup, he's like, but I have no hands, therefore I cannot move the cup. I'm like, you know what? You got feet.
Questioning my reality?
I'm like, you know what, Descartes? You may not got hands, but you got 2 feet. Walk across there and shove it with your body. I'm like, I think he was just trying to shirk responsibility. Talking about he ain't got no hands.
So that's about all I have. That's about all I have. I don't know if we want to do fan but why though before.
I think we got a few.
We got a few fan but why though, so I'll go ahead and read those off. We have from Shannon Joy 26. I could write about this for so long, but the concept was just so different and made me sit and think for about 3 hours when I first saw it. The special effects are still great. Trinity breaks barriers by being a more butch looking woman. And there are And she continues on with, and there is never one dumb lesbian joke made, and also one of the most fuck yeah endings. And then this is from Serial Sensei. Or Sensei? I like Serial.
Serial Sensei.
Yeah. He said, aside from being a great movie, it was one of the first times I went out of my way to read a script, and man, you could literally see the movie with the way the script was written. It made me appreciate the film that much more. And it looks like, I believe that is about it.
You're not going to read Lizzie's.
Lizzie can't even handle reality. But yeah, that's about all I have for this. Obviously, if we want to go into final thoughts real fast, we're wrapping up. I know we're getting a little long, but...
Yeah, final thoughts.
Final thoughts about the films. It's one of the most iconic films ever made with some of the most iconic imagery and fight choreography. And I think the Wachowskis made... once in a lifetime film. Like, they, you know, there's certain films that no matter how good of a director you are, there's the seminal film, and I think this is theirs, and it influenced a generation to follow, because you had 1999 and then you had the Y2K thing, and after that, like, it was all influenced, but a lot of the Y2K thing was influenced by the Matrix. Like, what the hell, what happened? Do we come out of the Matrix in 2000, whatever? But like, I don't think there's another film that influenced like a generation as much, and not only a generation, but people that were older and younger than the Wachowskis. Like, they influenced directors that were like in the game longer than them, and like who started copying them. And I think the Matrix is a film like that will never be copied. That can never be copied. It can be copied per se as it influences things, but it can never truly be copied. Oh, and I have to say, it was the first time, because I watched this when I was in Barbados, that I saw people actually going to the cinema dressed as characters. So this is when it influenced the Bajan culture in a massive way. Like, people went to the film dressed in trench coats and shades at night. And, like, that's when, like, Bajans started to actually dress like characters from films. Because after that was Fast and Furious, and, like, it became a whole...
I'm not going to lie. There was a guy in my school who dressed up like Neo. So I was in middle school and high school with him, and he dressed up like Neo from sixth grade until about, like, sophomore year. I'm pretty sure it was probably the same costume, too. The jeans. Every time for Halloween. It became a
whole thing in Barbados. Like, yeah.
I'll go next. Yeah, I just love The Matrix. And talking about it kind of makes me, you know, it makes me realize a whole bunch more stuff. How it's impacted impacted pop culture and like films after it. And it's also one of the reasons why I feel like it's one of the reasons why I don't like the, it's not that I don't like it, I agree with it. Like, Western films have a hard time making stuff, but I talked to somebody on Twitter about it. Cause she was like, oh, well it gets a pass because it's Western and Western films can't do this. And in my head, I'm like, no, I was like, it doesn't get a pass because people have proved that they can make amazing action fight sequences. That is a fault on the director for not doing it. And that is what I got. And I'm just kind of like, for me, I think The Matrix is that first point where I was really moved to like start go looking for more genres of films and more things that gave me that type of action, like that type of like physical combat, right? Like actual full out, like, I know kung fu. it made me want more of that. And it luckily, if you look at the movies that came out around it right after it, we got a whole influx of Western martial arts movies, which I treasure in my heart forever. But I think looking at this and looking at people respond to me for like my critique about the Captain Marvel fight scenes, you can't scapegoat that, because there are definitely Western directors who can do this and can work with fight choreographers in a way that makes things great. Like, and The Matrix solidified that. Okay, that's it.
For me, I mean, The Matrix, again, well, for one, it's, like, one of, like, the movies that me and my dad used to watch, like, all the time, like, the very first one. So I just have, like, very fond memories of, like, watching The Matrix with my dad. And we always watch, like, a lot of the movies that Kate and Carolyn talked about, like, all of all those action movies are all movies I watched. And this is the one I remember most fondly, just because it has so many cool elements from everything that we talked about. Like, it has elements of, like, Bruce Lee movies and elements of, like, Jet Li movies and, like, all this other stuff mixed in with just like this weird like philosophy stuff, which is cool. You know, Morpheus being like the Greek god for dreams. It just has like a lot of like really, really cool stuff that I think you have to watch more than once to kind of get. And then the second movie's good and the third movie's okay, but like as long as this first one sticks around and ages well, I think The Matrix will always kind of be in a really good spot as far as like culturally significant movies. And of course, without it, we probably wouldn't have John Wick, which is, you know, another amazing franchise with Keanu Reeves kicking ass. So I'm all about it. It's really, really great, and I want to go watch the movie now after this conversation.
I do kind of want to go watch The Reset, just because I was like, when we started talking about it, I was like, man, I don't remember anything from the second or third one.
I have pulled up in my YouTube browser The Matrix fight scenes, and we'll be going through these.
So
yeah, it's just done so well, man. Like it's just like all the, because we talk about like the fight scenes a lot, but like even like the editing stuff of, you know, tinting the Matrix in green and like tinting the real world in blue and like just like those little subtle things that I didn't really understand and like really see when I watched it the first time, and now watching it again and kind of knowing about it again as an adult, like gives you just more appreciation for the movie, even though it's, you know, 20 years later.
And also, and I will say this, like, to Shannon's point, I didn't realize this, and I actually have the lobby scene pulled up on my computer. Like when Trinity is in the trench coat right next to Neo, like they're styled exactly the same. Exactly. Yeah.
And kudos, and I think kudos for that has to go to the costume designer, because because reading up on how she designed the suits, it had to do with all about utility and how they were going to be used, and it had nothing to do with sexuality. And that's why like, I think also their costumes are also one of the most iconic things about the film, because like even looking at films now, a lot of the MCU films and like the DCEU films, like we gotta be honest, like a lot of the costumes are sexualized, and the only costumes in the MCU that are not sexualized are from Black Panther, and I would also say Captain Marvel. Like everything before those films is all about tits and ass and boobs. Like, look at I hate Black Widow's costume, because I'm like, she's a mercenary. Why is her? Why do we have all her boobs should be protected? Why are her breasts like?
So I actually think she's. I actually think out of the MCU, I think that she's the only one that is.
Oh,
like
you mean
that.
Black Widow?
Because like, well, yeah, Wasp. Because Wasp, yeah, Black, yeah, yeah. Because Wasp isn't. Valkyrie isn't. Sif,
but that has to do with, because that has, I think that's because they one. Because like for Valkyrie and Sif, because they're so heavily influenced by Norse mythology, like they if you look at Norse battle costumes, yeah, like if they had to like add indented breastplates, like they're like feminized, but like they're not like indented breastplates that you see in like comics. If they had done that, the MCU costume designer would have probably gotten shouted down.
But I definitely will say like, yeah, like I definitely will say like the, like I think when this is a whole different conversation, but like I don't think it's talked about enough, like how Wonder Woman is definitely still sexualized in her costumes. Sure. But yeah,
for sure.
But yeah,
I think the real costuming thing that we're missing out here is how the hell the Morpheus glasses just stay on the whole time.
Lawrence Fishburne's coolness.
Why can't I find glasses like that anywhere?
Nothing would dare fall off of Lawrence Fishburne's really face if he places it there. Like he holds it there. He holds it there by swagger alone.
That is a fact. That's a fact. That is 100% a fact.
I will say I didn't kind of touch on it, but that is something like that kind of you guys brought up of like, it did set like a trend of like the way people dress for a while there. Trench coats became in style, and even like the, just even like Trinity dress and everything, the matching people dress like that for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm. Grandma's boy.
Yes.
The glasses. God.
Sorry, Matt. Sorry. We got into the costume way too.
So 25 minutes later, Matt can do
sorry.
His final thought.
Sorry. Oh no. Sorry.
To attempt to wrap this up in a nice, quick fashion that obviously was not going to work. Obviously, this is probably one of my favorite movies. I will say, as far as like the editing and sound, and that you speak to that lobby moment, my family got like for the first time like I guess a surround sound. They wanted to test it out, and we tested it to see how well the sound to go to the sound editing everything would work. And so we would shake the entire house through the lobby scene playing The Matrix, and so we had fun seeing how much we could do that before we basically had something fall off the wall. About how many times we watched it. So that lobby scene is probably very iconic to me because I've seen it probably like 250 mm-hmm. times. We just put it on awesome. Replay. It's a great 3 minutes of between the music, the editing, the action, and everything. It's great. But no, I do kind of want to go watch the second and third one again and try to remember. Maybe they might be better with time. I don't know. The first one, always thing. Obviously, I think there's a lot of reasons why it's going to go. I know there have been talks of it possibly coming back. I'm okay with it not coming back.
No.
Yeah. Why would you do that? No. Don't touch classics. With the exception of Pet Sematary.
It's been 20 years.
No. There are some films that do not need reboots. Are, no. Yeah. No. And The Matrix is one. No.
I mean, we got John Wick. Be happy with John Wick, people.
We need a whole movie where the new Neo just decides whether or not he has hands or not. That's like the first 40 minutes of the movie.
I will say to Shannon's point, Carrie Ann Moss has made her career. She's basically said that this is basically, she got this role and basically her entire career took off from this.
This is also the only way I remember her name.
This is also true. Even when she played in Jessica Jones or all the other ones, I just called her Trinity.
Yeah, it's true. Like, yep. there are certain actors, you always associate them with the role. Like, yeah, she will always be Trinity to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it as a testament to how impressive she was as an actor and playing that role. You will always be my Trinity.
Yeah, she was amazing. She was definitely, as much as we talked about Keanu Reeves, she definitely was crucial.
Man, none of this would have happened without her.
Yeah, and I think too, I think too, I actually wonder, like, is she, I feel like she's one of the first, like, actual, like, women in an action movies and in a Western action movie with that type of agency. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I would say so.
Because I'm trying.
I would actually say so.
Yeah, no, I. Right? Because, like, I can't think of another action movie heroine that is. I mean, I guess Ripley, but, like, that's, like, more sci-fi. This is, like, hard action sci-fi.
But right? Even saying that, the thing I think what makes her character stands out is because even though she has the romantic link to Neo, that's not her only place as a character. That's not her full identity. Like, she's still, I love you, whatever, but I still got shit to go and do. Like, I got these things to go and defeat, and I have these agents to go and fight. Like, she has her own fights, and she has her own iconic moments. Like, you mentioned mm-hmm. the lobby scene. You know what scene I always remember from the lobby when she does all those flips? And runs across the wall. Come on. She has her own iconic moments in the series. So, like, that's why she also stands out, too. Everything is not about the man in her life.
No, this movie's only about Neo.
Okay, I take There's back no what groups. I said at the beginning of the show.
But that's all I have. Take us out.
Oh, my gosh.
Ed, thank you so much for coming on the show, Carolyn. Why don't you tell everybody where they can hear you, read you, find you?
Okay, my name is Carolyn. You can find me on Twitter at CarrieCNH12. So that's CarrieCNH12 on Twitter. I'm a freelance writer, film critic, and you can all find me every Saturday night co-hosting. So here's what happened. Every Saturday night co-hosting Saturday Night Sci-Fi, so that's hashtag Saturday Night Sci-Fi. I also co-host a podcast, So Here's What Happened, which is also hosted by the But Why The Podcast community. And I'm always talking about film, action movies, TV, thirsting, you know, stuff.
So if you enjoyed this and you want to hear us talk about more things on our Patreon, at the $3 level, you get access to exclusive episodes that we record just for our Patreon. So head on over to patreon.com/butwhythePC if you want to support us a little more. And actually, with as little as a dollar a month, you get access to all of our research notes as well as our episodes at least a day in advance. And you can find us on social media at butwhythePC on everything that is social and or media. And you can find me at omywithrander on Twitter. Adrian?
I just want to say, that was one of your smoothest closes almost ever, actually. I really enjoyed that.
You better clip that one.
Yep, clip it, insert it.
Yeah, time. Really need to clip that one. You can find me on Twitter at SuperReez93, SuperRuiz93.
Matt?
What is reality? I have no hands.